friend of a friend. That friend being Maggie Dawn, the person who normally hosts this show, but it's not Maggie Dawn speaking to you at this moment. It is instead me, Anya, her producer. Hi, everybody. Turns out they let me back on the air, folks. I didn't say anything last time that got me pulled off the radio with a comically large shepherd's hook. So it seems every time Maggie has somewhere better to be than with you guys, which of course is not the case, but anytime something like that might happen, hey, you might get stuck with me. So either be really nice to Maggie when she's here so that she never leaves you with me again, or enjoy the Maggie Dawn Show with Anya, which you're currently listening to. Welcome to the show, everybody. I'm Anya, her producer, like I said. And if you can't tell, I am just a little scatterbrained. I am just a little freaked out. Just have a little hilt in my voice and a shake in my hands as I'm coming onto the air today. Because when I accepted this idea of coming on to this show and talking, in the back of my mind, I had a secret rule for myself. A couple secret rules, but one that was really important to me was that as a Jewish person, I was not going to take one of these days where I came on the air and try to do some sort of huge retrospective about Israel, or really anything about Israel, because if there's one topic that I have found that even among good, close friends, a topic that will, man, just make people freak out is Israel. The whole area. In fact, when I refer to that part of the world, I try to not even say Israel or say Palestine. I use this word that I learned when I was doing my Jewish studies degree, which is the Levant, which is a mystical term for this area that hopefully won't upset anyone, right? I didn't want to talk about this place, this concept, this very painful history, because, first of all, I don't know enough about it. I've been to Israel. I came back. I was there at the start of 2020. I haven't been back since, quite obviously, because of COVID and a number of other things. But it's a place that I have been to, and there are people there that I worry about. And that is true for so many Jews tonight, so many non-Jews tonight, so many Palestinians tonight, so many non-Palestinians, so many people involved or uninvolved in the conflict directly are scared and frustrated. And that's horrible. That doesn't have, you know, those words don't have a lot of weight behind them. But I wanted to try to get on the air tonight. And for this opening section, instead of trying to convince someone or change your mind or do something that decades and decades of the best peace speakers and peacekeepers couldn't do, I'm not going to do that for you. There's no way. But maybe what I can do is highlight some things that I think other outlets, other people, other hosts aren't touching on. So I hope you'll join me in this special, not special, but different edition of the Maggie Dawn Show. The first fact I want to highlight is the correlation between the two dates of these attacks. When we talk about 50 years ago, the Yom Kippur War, it often strikes me how many people, Americans and non-Americans alike, what unites them is non-Jews, how many non-Jews don't even know what the words Yom Kippur mean. Is it a place in Israel that was attacked? Is it the name of a person? No, it's a holiday, and it's actually really our most sacred holiday. It's a holiday where we fast. Not a lot of Jewish holidays involve fasting. We like our food just like the Catholics and everybody else does, right? So when Israel was attacked on Yom Kippur, religious Jews, and if you're going, what do you mean religious Jews? Aren't all Jews religious? There's another piece to this puzzle we have to talk about. Religious Jews were going without food and water for the period of time of that holiday, right? The choice was made by those who attacked Israel on that day to attack at a time when those who were observing religious observance would be at their weakest. to talk about what's happening today, these past several days, I want to highlight the holiday that was being observed when these things happened. That holiday is Simchat, S-I-M-C-H-A-T, in Roman letters, English letters, I guess. Simchat Torah. And it quite literally means like the joy of Torah, which the joy of the law, the joy of having this book, this story, this thing that is so crucial to us. And it is about bringing families together. We literally unroll this huge scroll that is Torah. In synagogues, it's still a huge scroll. You have to be a little bit strong to pick it up. They can be kind of heavy. And we unroll it all the way, and it would fill like an average-sized cafeteria. And there's dancing and singing, and kids are getting candy, and it's a really, really, really fun holiday. And 99% of Americans, I think, don't even know that it exists. But to speak on pain when there should be joy, to speak on war when there should be peace, I don't have the words to change these things. All I have is a sinking feeling in my stomach that tells me people that I care about are going to get killed this week, and an unending anxiety that there is absolutely sweet F.A., if I can say that without the FCC coming after me. There's nothing I can really do about it besides pray. And even as a religious person, I'll say this, you know, you've just come from the devil's advocates who, you know, just spoke very passionately about religion and not being a part of it. And I get it. There was a good chunk of my life where I also wasn't a part of religion. I am now as a Jew, right? And even as that person, praying feels empty right now when you look at all of this. Praying feels like I might as well sit on my hands than put them together, right? But at a certain point, it's all that can be done. I don't have the words for what would solve this conflict. I don't have the words for what will solve my own anxiety. But I will say this, right? This has far less to do with religion than it does land rights and governance rights and the dignity of the human spirit. To complicate this situation by saying this is Jews, religious Jews versus religious Muslims is deeply incorrect on a demographic level. When we look at Israel's Jewish population total, which again, not every single person who lives in Israel is Jewish. There are many Christians, there are many Muslims, there are many Baha'is and Buddhists and atheists and many, many different types of people there. But of the community that says, yes, I'm a Jew, many of them say, I'm an atheistic Jew. I'm simply an ethnic Jew. I'm simply, you know, these are folks who don't believe in the Jewish God, but were raised in Judaism and still participate in things like coming home for Passover in the same way that there are tons and tons and tons of Americans and non-Americans who were raised Christian and don't believe in God. But hey, you'll come home for Christmas, won't you? You'll come have Easter brunch with us, right? A huge percentage of Israel's Jewish population is that kind of Jewish. So to conflate it with this idea that this is a holy war makes my heart hurt. That's all I can say in an FCC safe way. It brings pain to my heart because I know many of these people. They are not religious. They would scoff and laugh at you if you said, oh, all of you religious Israeli Jews, all you do is go to shul and pray. They'd be like, no, I haven't been to shul since my bat mitzvah, right? And this is the same when we talk about Hamas. Hamas is not a representative for the Palestinian people. It is not the PLA. It is not any of these organizations that seek to, through legislation and through social movement, change the things that are happening to the Palestinian people, the horrible things that are happening there. This is a group that attacked a music festival. This is a group that attacked a kibbutz. If you don't know, a kibbutz is like a farming commune. It's a place, there are often farms or wineries or distilleries where people live together. And in the 60s, it was like all the kids would live in one house and the parents would have their own houses and everyone would eat in a cafeteria. These are like places for people of all ages and families to live. They are not military outposts. They are not places for violence. No place should be a place for violence, but it's hard to listen to folks who hear these words like kibbutz and knesset and all these different things, and they don't know what they are, but they have opinions. And look, again, I'm no expert. I have opinions. The only thing I care about tonight, and the thing I hope maybe you care about tonight, is that there are people dying, and it has to stop. And to mystify this by saying people are dying because of God or people are dying because of someone else's God is just not, frankly, not correct. This is a governmental issue. This is an issue of peoplehood, an issue of voting rights, an issue of access rights, and far, far less an issue of who do you like more, Moses or Muhammad? That's all I'm going to say on Israel. When we come back, I'm going to have a totally different thing to talk to you about. A lot more lighthearted, but I see there are callers. I will screen you just as we go to break. What you're listening to is Black Sheep. Of course, it's the Brie Larson version. What else would I play for you? From, of course, the film Scott Pilgrim versus the World. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show. Feel free to call in at 844-967-2789. Indeed. That is Paramore with Hard Times. Such an upbeat song for such a sad title, Hard Times. And those lyrics, man, they hit you to your core. Hey, we've got two callers quick. I'm going to take them before we move on to anything else. First up is Mark. Mark, go ahead, my friend.
Yeah, it's just tragic because basically when it gets right down to it, as far as religion goes, it's a family squabble because both, you know, Judaism and Islam descend from, you know, from Abraham, mm-hmm. from what I understand, and that the tragedy that in Iran right now, the people that are running the show now have kind of forgotten that one of their roots going back to when, you know, Iran was Persia and Zoroastrianism, which was another monotheistic religion, as my understanding, greatly influenced Judaism. Because, like we were talking earlier, that prior to, you know, the Jews being held captive in Babylon and then rubbing your religious influences with the Zoroastrianisms that were in Persia, that's where angels gained their wings.
I mean, right.
Because prior to that, angels did not have wings, as far as my understanding, and the whole, you know, and we can't just say, well, it's just been the Muslims that have been bad to the Jews, because of course when the Christians retook, you know, the Spain from the Moors in 1492. The first thing they did when they secured all of Spain is they expelled the Jews.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that,
right.
And, you know, either forced them to convert or they expelled them. And
right.
So it's just sad. We have to recognize the historical realities. But right now, the people just dying on both sides.
Right, right.
And just horrible that people, this had nothing to do with religion because, you know, no good Muslim is going to condone the murder of other people, especially beheading babies, apparently, which had happened.
Right. I hate to cut you off, Mark. You know, it's not about good. No one in their right mind is condoning this, unless condoning anything violent to that point, right? Unless they love themselves or their God more than humanity, right? And that is where things get scary. And to talk about Iran and Persia and the Jewish history there, man, that's a whole semester, right? When we talk about Jewish holidays like Purim coming up next March, April, somewhere in there, that's a history where Persia had a Jewish queen who had to stop a genocide against the Jews at that time. And to talk about, hey, 1492 on Indigenous Peoples Day, as I'm calling it, as everyone, all the cool kids are calling it and things like that, right? 1492 in Spain and the Inquisition, that's another anti-Jewish genocide. There is just the anti-Jewish history, the anti-Muslim history, these two things go back very, very far. Thank you so much for that, Mark. One other caller, I believe we have David from Mequon. David, go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. I've called in a couple times in some of the other shows today, and I just want to say I am Jewish faith.
Same here, yep.
And we do have family in Tel Aviv, mm-hmm. and one of the rockets landed about a block away from his apartment building, and he's been in a bomb shelter. A lot of people don't realize this, but most of the buildings and homes that are newer in Israel yep. all have bomb shelters.
That's
which
right.
tells you all that you need to know about, you know, that area of the world.
Right.
That being said, I will preface this. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if you're aware of this. So in Sydney, Australia, this just happened today. Mm-hmm. The Opera House, big anti-Israel, you know, F the Jews, gas the Jews. Ali Akbar, God is great. Unfortunately, you do have a radical component within the Arab and Islam nations. I'm not saying the majority, but there's a lot of them. There's literally billions of them. And even if you have like just a small percentage, that's still going to be like, you know, 30, 40 million people, which is still a huge amount of people.
Right. I'm going to pause you right there, David. I apologize for doing that. We're coming up close to a break, and I just want to touch on that. Yes, there are these anti-Israel rallies happening everywhere. They're I'll say this, right? There are rallies happening everywhere for both sides, and some of those rallies on each side are, hey, let's stop the fighting, and some of those rallies on each side are, hey, let's be done existing in a world with people like that. Right? From both sides. I don't want to be that person who sits here and says both sides, both sides, both sides, because that's meaningless, right? But I have to put up the defenses, right? And be like, hey, yes, there is extremism, obviously, in these groups. That's why Hamas is often referred to not as an Islamic group, but an Islamist, right? And it's so tiny of a difference, but it is meant to highlight, right, that when we look at the doctrine of Islam, the actions that Hamas, ISIS, later called ISIL, the actions they take are not congruent with the teachings of Islam. I'll speak for myself and my view of Jewish ethics too, right? The unfortunate truth is we also have an extremist side that from Netarikarta, a Hasidic group that promotes Palestinian, quote, freedom through denying the Holocaust, right? That's a form of extremism on our side, not to mention the right-wing extremism happening in Israel. But David, I thank you for what you said. I'm really, really hoping that your family in Tel Aviv is safe. I'm hoping all families throughout the region are safe. And I think your point that there are bomb shelters in the basements of so many of these buildings. When I was in Israel and we're driving down this kind of desert highway, I'm like, wow, there's so many bus stops out here in the middle of the desert. And they're all painted so beautifully. No, they were all bomb shelters painted so that the kids wouldn't be so afraid of them. That's true on both sides. It sucks on both sides. And on the other side of this break, a different topic, because my heart can't take this. I'll see you guys in a minute. had to bring the energy back up. Welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show. I am not Maggie Dawn for once. I'm always not Maggie Dawn, but on this show for once, the voice you're hearing is not Maggie Dawn. It is instead her producer, Anya. Hi, it's me. Moving on from what we just experienced in the past half hour, which was a little bit of news and a lot of cardiac arrest for me, we're going to move on to some different news. This week, I underwent the also very anxious process of preparing my home to have noted civic media host James Santel come over to record a rare pre-recorded episode. It was one of those situations where instead of both of us driving out here to Waukesha, we would have had to cross that last day of Brewers playoff play traffic. And let me tell you, I could tell some of y'all were angry about the game before you got to it by the way that you were driving in the days leading up to it in that area. But we just decided, you know what, instead of coming all the way out to Waukesha, I have this microphone, we'll sit in my living room and we'll get this recorded. And folks, if you've ever needed a real kick in the butt to get your place clean, if you've ever just needed a hard deadline in your future to really go, this is the time to have your place looking pretty decent, I have a very simple save for you. Simply invite someone who has their own Wikipedia page over, because you will suddenly find that, yes, you do have the energy at 6 a.m. to get up and finish those dishes. You do have the energy to get up and get things off your floor because you're motivated. At least I am motivated by the fears of what people will think about my messy, messy home. So all of that is to say that Jim came over. We pre-recorded this episode. It's the one that went out this Saturday. If you haven't listened to it yet, or if you usually don't listen to Morning Cannolis, what are you doing? You're missing out on some of the best stuff we put out. Jim's program covers a lot of really, really important topics in a way that's really easy to understand, so much so that even I understand some of the things he talks about. And one of them that caught my eye is this story. I'm going to read to you now the short write-up to sort of wet your palate for what we're going to talk about here. On March 27th of 2023, that's this year, the High Court agreed to hear Etchison Hotels v. Laufer to decide the standing issue. Deborah Laufer, who is both visually and mobility impaired, and uses a wheelchair, cane, or other support for mobility, alleged that Etchison Hotels LLC, which operates the Village Coast Inn and Cottages in Maine, did not provide sufficient information on accessible accommodations on its website in compliance with Title III of the ADA. So I'll pause there. So essentially, what this woman who is disabled does is she goes and she checks out these websites for hotels. And under the law, ADA, Title III of ADA, if you're a hotel, you got to be upfront. What do you have? Do you have everything in these specified rooms or otherwise that a person who has a disability will be able to comfortably stay in your hotel, use their room to the full extent that every other able-bodied every other able-bodied guest is privy to. I was like, that sounds, I'm glad she's doing that. I'm glad she's looking into it. And then Jim follows up with this. The court case is that some people think that she shouldn't get to do this. She shouldn't get to look at the hotel websites and go, hey, there's things missing here, things that are legally supposed to be here. The court case is if she goes to a website and sees this, but she wasn't going to stay at the hotel anyways, she wasn't planning on it, then there's no damages, there's no standing in all this. And I kind of just have to throw my hands up in the air, because what other crime, not to compare breaking ADA to something like punching someone in the face, right? But to say, oh, no, the issue here is that, yeah, you saw a crime, you noticed negligence, you noticed that something that's legally supposed to be there wasn't. Yeah, sure you did. But if you're not going to plan on giving us some money to stay in this hotel that doesn't accommodate you, then where was the harm? Folks, the harm is in the crime already committed, in not having the ADA information. And again, it's not a crime transgressed against someone that's as painful as getting socked in the jaw. But to act like it's just a breeze for disabled folks to just go through the world looking at all these hotels that don't do what they're legally supposed to do, that don't provide what they're legally told they're supposed to provide. And their response is, well, you weren't going to stay here anyway, so your observances, your noting of the illegality of what's happening on this website doesn't matter anymore? What, in what world? In what world does the OSHA inspector walk onto the factory floor and the foreman goes, hey, get out of here, OSHA man. Don't take me by the hand. Get out of here. You were never going to work here anyway. So what does it matter if it's safe to you, OSHA man? Well, it matters because it matters for everyone. Yeah, Ms. Laufer, is that right? Yeah, Ms. Laufer wasn't going to stay at the Coast Village Inn. But that's not because she has something out against the Village Coat. Sorry, what is it called? The Coast Village Inn. It's not because she has some personal vendetta against them. She couldn't stay there because she can't. You didn't provide the things she needs. Folks who are able-bodied, I will count myself into that. I've had some leg surgeries in the past where I did note, because I was using crutches and a wheelchair for a short period of time, that it is a pain in the butt to get around anywhere while disabled, right? So to listen to this and say, oh, it doesn't matter because she was never going to stay there. Folks who are able-bodied, would you stay at a hotel if the elevator shaft and the stairwell were empty? How would you get to your room? That is what disabled folks are going through. It is very, very simple. If you showed up to the Hilton wherever and they checked you in, they took your credit card, all these things, and they go, all right, you're in room 604. That'll be on the sixth floor. Go on up. Oh, okay, where do I go? Oh, open that door. That's our stairwell. And you open it, and there's just a rickety rope ladder hanging from the sixth floor. Go on up. Go on up. Oh, you have bags? Oh, you have a kid? Oh, you physically can't do that? Oh, well, you've already paid for the room. You've already put down the non-refundable deposit. Have we not all had terrible experiences with hotels promoting themselves to be something they weren't? But for us able-bodied folks, right? For us who stairs, at least one set of stairs isn't an issue, or for whom you could squeeze through thinner doorways or walk across uneven pathways or step over debris that has been knocked over. If you can do those things, then, hey, you can survive. You can access most any hotel room. Maybe it's not clean. Maybe it's not pretty. But you can get to it and you can use it. And, hey, I've been on some long trips where that's what I'm asking for out of my hotel room. A flat surface to lay down on and sleep. A roof over my head to keep the rain out, right? That's what these disabled folks are asking too. The difference is that because of the way that they are, because they're disabled, maybe they're in a wheelchair, everything needs to be lower. Maybe they have something else going on. They need to be able to open things without using their hands. It's pathetic. And if you say, well, at least OSHA is a government, you know, it's a whole organization. This is just one lady. All right, then fund it. Fund the Office of Nosy Disabled Folks looking at what hotels across the country have or don't have. Fund the Department of Paying Disabled Folks to work from home on their computers to investigate whether or not these places are breaking the law. Because I'll say it again, it is the law. ADA is the law. Yes, there are places that are grandfathered in, but man, do we really, really overuse that excuse. I live in a building that is not ADA compliant. It is grandfathered in because it is as old as dirt, this building, okay? And there are folks who I live with in that building who are disabled. No one that I've seen who uses a wheelchair, because as I'm about to describe, it would be impossible for them to enter my building. But there is an individual who uses a walker in my building. And not that long ago, that individual, while walking up some of the stairs in our lobby in front of me, tilted backwards and fell. And I, because what else do you do, tried to catch this person. I'm no bodybuilder. If you're watching me on Facebook, look at these little arms. There's not a lot happening there to catch a falling person. So we both went down and we sat there in shock on the tile floor, and they apologized and I apologized. They apologized. It was very awkward for everyone involved. And all I could think was, oh my God, if this person had fallen and my soft body had not been there for them to fall onto, literally fall onto, as I tried, you know, feebly to catch them and keep them upright on these stairs with their walker, all I could think was, if I hadn't been there to just physically stop them, that's the back of their head and that's a tile floor. You do the math. I don't want that to happen to that person. I don't want to come downstairs and find that that had happened to that person. I don't want someone else who lives in my building to come down and find that. I don't want that person to fall on a slow afternoon where no one's coming in or out of the lobby and that person be stuck there on the floor. They shouldn't have to be. There's no reason that in this day and age, a building of any age is quote unquote unable to be retrofitted with some form of ADA compliant entrance. And I get that this is so boring for so many people, but whatever the opposite of boring is, that is the disabled experience where ADA is treated like a suggestion and not law. Every day is an exciting adventure. Will I be painfully knocked off of my mobility device? Will I be harassed in public? Will I not notice an uneven floor or an uneven sidewalk that wasn't kept up by its owner? And that will be what causes me to fall forward and crack my head open? I don't know. What an exciting adventure for us to take together. You, the person who won't pay for a ramp to our building, and me, the person whose life is at risk. Aren't we just a fun pair? In closing with all of this, please do listen to Morning Cannolis, either on Saturday mornings or in its podcast form. I think the insight that Jim gives is a lot better than whatever that impassioned ramble was that I just gave. But whatever you thought of it, this and also our previous topic, it all comes back to one very, 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 very simple idea. Care about the people around you. Upholding the ADA and ensuring that the disabled folks around you are able to get to and from where they're going unhindered, unassisted, independently, is caring for your neighbor. Ensuring that the building you live in or manage or own has accessible entryways. Folks, it's not just for the people on wheels or the people on crutches. Haven't you ever had to pull a wagon into a building? Haven't you ever had to move furniture? Think of all the divots on sidewalks. Do you know what that's from? All those divots, you know, where the sidewalk meets the road and there's a little dip so that you can walk down it easier, pull your cart or whatever you have. That's the ADA, baby. The ADA gave that to you. So uphold it for the rest of us, huh? Something, something, care for your neighbors. Something, something, love thy neighbor, even for all the religious talk we've been doing. But whatever it is that you do, ensure that you're doing it with, everyone in mind, including those who, hey, need a little bit of extra assistance. Taking you to the break, this is Man Eater by Nelly Furtado.
I wish nothing but the best for you both. I know the version of me.
An older version of me. No way. You guys couldn't handle it. Hey, what's up? It's Anya, and this is the Maggie Dawn Show. Welcome back to our last little bit of time together, but don't get too worried, my friends. I will be back tomorrow. That's right. Maggie's gone again, and I will be around to talk to you. And then on Thursday, Maggie returns. She has a fantastic guest who, of course, their name is escaping me right now because my brain has been on a million other things, but I know this to be true. Her guest on Thursday is fantastic. Her topic is how women are making, we are making ourselves literally sick, physically sick through stress. And not that we're making ourselves that way, but what are the stimuli? What are the issues? What are the social issues contributing to that? Do not miss it. It's going to be really, really good. To roll us through this last segment, I want to touch on two topics, education and politics, something that seems like everyone on this station talks about. But I'm going to take it in two different ways. I'd like to close this show and the shows that I host, this last section, I think, with some human interest, something I think maybe we don't get enough of. I was really inspired by journalists from before me, like Hunter S. Thompson, someone I shouldn't have read at the age that I read some of his work at. David Ferrier, fantastic Kiwi journalist whose response to an extremely homophobic returned message when he asked for an interview with some folks led him down an incredible rabbit hole of American crime and subversion. That documentary is called Tickled. You should check it out. Don't Google it. Don't look into it. Just go watch it. It's very good. All right. And one other who I was really inspired by, an author named John Ronson, not Ron Johnson. Don't get him confused. John Ronson, a fantastic author of books like Men Who Stare at Goats and Okja. Perhaps you've heard of those. Those both got turned into films. On the flip side, Ron Johnson, terrible senator. Don't get him confused. One's my hero. The other's maybe the bane of my existence. But taking notes from them, I want to do two things. I want to thank some people, and I want to share with you a story that you can share with your friends and family this week. One, it's a little silly, it's a little funny, but it's also a little political. And it does kind of feel like something right out of Ron Johnson's playbook. In case I don't get to say it in the future, I want to thank some folks who made it possible for me to solo host something that truly I never thought I'd be doing. First of all, obviously Maggie and the Civic Media team, Luke, Brian, Corey, Casper, Drew, Aaron, Nate, Tony, Brady, and Jane, of course. And I want to thank some people who helped me get here in the larger sense, which are my teachers and my professors. So to thank some folks from John Muir Middle School and Wausau West in Wausau, Mr. Ellenbecker, Mrs. Seymour, Mr. Spratty, Mrs. Jameson, Ms. Groshek, Mr. Nelson, Herr Renardi, Mr. DeYoung, Mr. Burl, and the lunch ladies who let me get away with quite a bit when I had absolutely no money in my account. I want to say thank you to y'all. And from UWM, Professor Ames McGinnis, Ariel Teal, Carl Bogner, Kelly Kirshner, Lori Felker, Alex Tornis, Isaac Brooks, Eric Lohman, and all the grad students who touched my life. Thank you. This journalism minor is going so much further than I ever thought. And the film major has been completely put aside. But thank you guys for getting me here. It means a lot. All right, last story. Instead of being sappy, this story comes to us from Ghana, far away from our little state of Wisconsin. This story piqued my interest because the opening to it sounds like a fantastic example for American politicians to follow. Ms. Evelyn Anite is a Ugandan politician and state minister of finance for investment for privatization, which is to say she is in charge of getting money to spend money to make things private, I think. Well, she decided she wanted to run for an additional seat. She was going to run, or did run, I should say, for the Koboko Municipality Parliamentary seat. You know that one? We all know what that is, right? And in her race, one of her promotions, she didn't pay for a billboard. She didn't pay for an ad, although if you were going to pay for an ad, where else would you go but the Civic Media Radio Network, of course. But instead of doing that, she bought an ambulance for the local hospital. What a fantastic move, I thought. She bought an ambulance because their local hospital did not have an ambulance. Wow, that is amazing. Now, the ambulance, I should say, did have her name and face on both sides. But other than that, what a great move. Until I learned this fact. Unfortunately, Ms. Anite did not win the election for the Koboko municipality parliamentary seat. You know, all is fair in voting and such. She did not win her election. Too bad. So Ms. Anite decided to take with her what she brought, which is to say she has taken her ambulance back, folks. She ran for office. She said, hey, if you elect me, here's an ambulance I'm going to give you. And if you elect me, I'll even pay for the driver's salary for 6 months. And when they didn't elect her, she said, yoink, I'm going to take that with me. I found out about this through a tweet. I want to just talk to you as we roll into the end. Before we go into busted pencils, educated educators talking education, definitely stick around for that. Her response, which cracked me up again, why I say it seems like something right out of Ron Johnson's playbook. A Twitter account called Africa Facts Zone reported on it with a photo of the ambulance, and she wrote, first of all, thank you for bringing this up. First, it is true that I took my ambulance back, and I have no apologies for that. Why did I do it? It's because they didn't vote for me. So did you expect me to walk away with nothing? Hey, there's something to be said for her honesty, right? She hits us with this last kicker. Her tweet on why she rescinded her ambulance, her gift of an ambulance after losing the race, her reason, her rhyme. Very simple. She said, Galatians 6:7, a man reaps what he sows. Man, if that's not where I think some of our extreme right Christian politicians are headed, hey, here's an ambulance as long as you vote for me. But hey, the Bible says I can take it back if you don't. That's not any form of bribery, right, folks? Thanks for joining me today. This has been the Maggie Dawn Show with Anya. Instead of Maggie Dawn, replacing her just for today and tomorrow, she's back on Thursday with her incredible guest. I've been Anya. Thank you for listening. Keep it locked here on the Civic Media Radio Network. See you tomorrow. You seem very well. Things look peaceful. I'm not quite as well. I thought you should know. Did you fall?